Welcome to Women Kicking Glass, the only radio show on OC Talk Radio dedicated to empowering women to be the best leaders they can be in any endeavor they choose. Patty Grimm is our host and interviews top women in a variety of fields to help women grow, learn, and lean in together. Patty has over 25 years of experience in primarily male-dominated fields in senior-level management positions. Patty is the owner of Advantage Training Limited, an organizational leadership team training company. She recently released her new book for women called Quiet Women Never Changed History. Be strong, stand out, and stand up. With the subtitle, Let's Go Kick Some Glass.
And let's go do it right now with Patty and her guest.
Yeah, we have the absolutely amazing Dr. Betty Yoribe. Yoribe?
Yes.
All right.
Absolutely.
She is Executive Vice President at California Bank and Trust, and she's got amazing background and career in banking. She is the author of the book, Hashtag Values, The Secret to Top Level Performance in Business and in Life. So we're going to talk a lot about her career and her book. She's recognized as an international speaker, trainer, consultant, expert on leadership and turnaround, managing peak performance, especially during lots of time of change, amazing humanitarian efforts, and she really shares her passions and values on a global scale. So she's talked in Asia and Europe, the Vatican. She's been to the White House. She's been to the Pentagon.
Yes.
I mean, absolutely incredible. She has a heart for serving others, and she's really used this idea behind leadership to really help the bank itself be one of the most profitable, best-recognized banks in all of Orange County, which is a tough thing to do because there's a lot of banks here. So
yes.
We're going to talk about her career, and we're also going to talk about her approach to leadership and her background in all of those kinds of things. So thanks for joining us today, Betty.
Thank you so much, Patty. It's really a pleasure to be here.
And we have so much in common. We could talk for hours.
I know. It's amazing.
It's incredible. So first, let's get the promo piece out of the way. Let's hold up your book.
Okay.
Let's hold up your book so people can see the book. Hashtag values, the secrets of top-level performance in business and in life. So we're going to talk about that. But let's first start talking about you. You started out as a young child in Colombia, and now you're an executive vice president of a major bank in California. Tell us a little bit about your background and how you got to where you are.
Well, it's interesting because most people come to America to find a better life. When my mother was 45 years old, she sat us down, my three brothers and I was 12, and told us that she wasn't going to stand for the kind of life she had. My dad was a millionaire, but he had an alcoholic problem, and he, of course, women and different things.
Right.
And so she decided to stand up for herself and come to the United States. So we came to America. And in an airplane ride, we became poor.
Wow.
And so I went from being a princess, if you will, to being, it's kind of like the Cinderella syndrome. So I became the maid in the house. I had to learn how to make my own bed, which is kind of funny, but hey, it built character. And then I cleaned houses and helped my mom. And eventually I retired my mother with my first job. And, education was really important to me. But that's how I got to America. It was I think it was the first values-based decision I made because my mother gave us the opportunity to make the decision. Do we stay back in the country and we wouldn't need anything, or do we come to the United States and find peace? And that was the biggest value for her, was the ability to go to church and to have peace in her life and to have a different future for her children.
That's incredible. So you left all of that behind to come to the United States. And did you speak English at the time?
Oh, no. No, I didn't. I did not. I knew how to say, my name is Betty. And that's probably about it. So I have an aunt, my Aunt Ruby, who just quickly became like my own mother.
Right.
And she taught me how to conjugate verbs and how to put together simple sentences in my first month or so. But languages luckily come pretty easy to me, so I was able to learn it pretty quickly.
Oh, that's great. That's great. So tell us about your career. How did you get into banking and move up the corporate ladder and all the things that you've done?
I started out my entrepreneurship career before my banking career, and I had an engineering and manufacturing company, Kaiser Permanente's gynecological light was my light. That was my first claim to fame. And once I graduated from college, and parted from that particular company and that partnership, I started in banking. And it was back in 1988, believe it or not, with a major banking organization that is now a global organization. I started as an officer during loans, and very quickly, within a year and a half, I became a branch manager in Southern California. I was the youngest branch manager at the time for the bank. And then I became with they used to call me the quicker picker upper because I would take a branch that was not profitable and make it profitable, and then I would take a region or an area, 25 branches, 26 branches, and then very quickly became a strategy manager for 300 branches where we turned around Southern California for the bank, and the profitability was such that the American Bankers Association called upon us to do a lot of speaking, and that's where I started speaking around the profitability and how we did it and the process that we went through and so forth. So I've been in banking for a better part of 30 years.
Yeah, I started in banking out of college, and I started just part-time when I was still finishing my senior year.
Oh, my goodness.
And I never thought I would end up in banking. I thought, you know, I needed a job, so I went to my godfather, who was an executive vice president with a big bank here in California, and I said, I need a job. I have student loans. I just need a job. And I got into banking, and I fell in love with it.
Oh,
so I stayed with that bank for 5 years. Then I ended up going to First Interstate, another bank, and moved my way up, some sort of similar to you. I was a district sales and service sales manager, and the bank was going through this major culture change. They wanted somebody to head it up, and they came to me, and I'm like, but I'm not an HR. I'm not an OD, an organizational psychology person. I don't know all this stuff. They said, yeah, but you've got a good business head, and you'll make this work.
Yeah, and you know that I find that as long as you have a good background, a good business head, then you're able to accomplish. And you have something that's really unique. You have the EQ and the IQ.
Right.
And I think that's what makes you so unique and so good at what you do is you're able to tackle any issue from any standpoint. And, you know, I was talking to a friend of mine, Mark Golston, Dr. Mark Golston. He does a lot of work with negotiations and how to listen and all of that, speaks all over the world. And he talks about being transactional as well as transformational.
Right.
And that's very rare to find both in a leader. And that is something I think that you and I both share.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank
Absolutely.
You.
Absolutely. Yes.
So how do you use your transformational aspect, your value base, to really accelerate the performance of your organization? Like you said, you're the fixer picker upper. You know, I was the energizer bunny. If something needs fixed, they would give it to her, and she'll either make it work or she'll figure out that it's not going to work, and we'll just get rid of that piece of the business that we're going to do.
Yeah.
So how do you use your values to really lead the performance of the organization and how you manage your people?
You know, it's funny. I just wrote an article this morning that's going to be published in the next couple of weeks in a major magazine in Orange County. And in this particular article was, how do you hire the right people? And it's all about the people. And that's how I started it. It's all about the people,
right?
And I think traditionally, when you take a look at senior level leaders, C-level leaders, we always take a look at the numbers, bottom line.
Mm-hmm.
When we have a meeting, we talk about the numbers. We take a look at the trajectory of the company and how is it moving? Is it moving higher? Is it moving forward? At California Bank and Trust, we're very proud because our profitability is off the records and so forth. But we don't stop to realize that it's people who are doing this. And so when what I do is I focus on the people first. One of the things I did when I first came to the California Bank and Trust was really to build trust. And how do you build trust with people? You build trust by getting to know people on a personal level, by really showing that you care about them. How do you show that you care about them? I was coaching a senior level leader from another bank that asked me for some advice. This person had just taken over a very big position in a very major bank, and she wasn't getting quite the traction. And one of the things I shared with her, and I have it, actually I wrote about this in my book because I learned this from someone else that I interviewed for the book many years ago. I went and talked to every single individual and found out, okay, what's working, what's not working. If you had a magic wand, what would you do differently? And what do you do on weekends?
So something personal in there, like get to know them as a person.
Get to know them as a person. People don't care how much you know until they know how much you care.
Exactly.
And it's an old adage, but that's true. Yeah. If you think about the greatest leaders you've had or the greatest leaders that you have had an mm-hmm. opportunity to have mm-hmm. contact with, earlier you were telling me about a fantastic leader in South America.
Yeah, exactly.
In Colombia, my country.
And
you said he was one of the greatest leaders because he really genuinely cared and mm-hmm. he followed through.
Yeah.
So it's the little things that you focus on that make the biggest impact in our people. I always say, we sneeze, they feel a hurricane. and it's true. Whatever
yes.
we do, we're in a magnifying glass. And if we don't realize that our actions are the ones that speak for us as leaders, as parents, as community leaders, yeah. as women and as people in general, it is our actions that really speak.
Yeah, I heard an old saying, and I'm not even sure who actually said this one, which was basically, what you do speaks so loudly, I can't hear
what you're saying.
Yes. I mean, I love that. And then my favorite Maya Angelou quote is, people won't remember what you did, people won't remember what you say, but they will remember how you made them feel.
Yes,
and I
absolutely.
Use that in every workshop, every leadership course, somehow that's a quote in there some way. People remember how you made them feel.
Yeah, it has to be a visceral expression, a visceral feeling in an experience for them to really remember you.
Yeah.
And in order for you to get that kind of a visceral experience from someone else, yeah. you have to get in the water with them, and you have to meet them exactly where they are, not where you want them to be, but where yeah. they are.
Exactly. Yeah. I love that. Get in the water with them. There's
yep.
there's the old golden rule, right? Which is, you know, treat people the way they want to be treated.
Yes.
There's also the platinum rule.
Oh my gosh, I just mentioned that to one of my employees this morning, and I call it the platinum rule also.
Well, treat people, yeah, don't treat the people the way you want to be treated. Treat the people the way they want to be treated.
Yeah.
And that means you get to know your people.
You
get to know them on a personal level. I mean, you
Absolutely.
Don't have to dig into their complete family, but you've got to show that you care.
Yes. Yes, you do. And it's the little things. When I first started, for example, at California Bank and Trust or any other team that I've ever led, I will go to their location. I will take a look at what's
yep.
going on in their lunchroom. In the lunchroom, if you want to look at the culture, look at what people really value, you can see it in the lunchroom.
You can see it in the lunchroom. You could see it sometimes
at their desk.
Yeah.
What are the things they have? And those are, well, they're called artifacts. But you take a look at what we call artifacts all around. And that's how you can know. I can go into a branch, and within 45 seconds, I can tell you this is a well-run branch. I mm-hmm. can tell you that they're a good team, that they get along, that they really care about their client and each other.
Right.
You could tell if they are, if they're a team, if they work mm-hmm. cohesively as a team. There's so much that you could tell. And they don't even have to open their mouth.
Yeah.
You could do the same study show. You could do the
yep.
same in a relationship. You just watch. Malcolm Gladwell did this.
Right.
He watched people. And in the first, what was it, 2 minutes of a conversation,
yeah.
he could tell within 90% of certainty who was going to be divorced or not. How
yeah.
do you like that?
Wow. That's interesting.
Yes.
So who do you attribute all this values and beliefs? Where did you, were you born with this?
You know, I think that all of us are born with a certain value system. And I think that the higher the leader, the higher the level of the leader, the more cognizant we become about our value system and what we're imparting mm-hmm. upon others. And studies show that when a leader gets to a certain level, the highest level of a leader is when they're able to observe themselves behaving in a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
So to answer your question, I think I learned many of my values, of course, from my parents, from
right.
my mother,
mm-hmm.
her devotion to God and her spirituality and her hard work and her determination to do the right thing, it's not anybody that just, you know, takes off and goes to a different country. For my father, hard work mm-hmm. and determination. He was born poor, and he became a millionaire. He was the oldest of 12 children.
Wow.
And he took care of all his children. So there were different parts that I learned from my dad. Also, mm-hmm. not to overdrink and, you know, things like that. Things that he changed at an older age. But so, and then the ability to give love openly and the ability to be vulnerable in front of your children and the ability to have that EQ. So, mm-hmm. so I got both pieces, the transactional piece and the transformational piece from both my parents originally. And then, you know, birds of a feather fly together.
Yep.
And so be careful who you surround yourself with. My mother used to say, mira con quien andes y te diré quién eres. Look who you're with and I will tell you who you are.
And oh, that is beautiful.
So I've kept that and I've taught that to my children and to all my teams throughout the years. So I've been really careful about who I surround myself with. Very careful. Mm-hmm. I don't surround myself with people who have values that are different than mine. I'm very careful about who I hire. I'm very mm-hmm. careful. When I came to California Bank and Trust, I did a cultural study on California Bank mm-hmm. and Trust, and I found the value system was very similar to mine
yeah.
with Harris Simmons at the helm of Zions Bank Corp. We're a division of Zions Bank Corp. And mm-hmm. in fact, Harris is in my book.
Right.
I felt so strongly about the value system that just came from generations all the way and permeated throughout the entire organization. My friends, my family, the people mm-hmm. I associate with. I'm in your show because yeah. who you are
right.
and the value system that you have. So
yeah.
everything
Thanks.
Has to be aligned.
Thanks so much. So just one quick question before we take a break. A lot of times the research that I've seen on women, they seem to get to the glass, they seem to sort of hit their head against the glass ceiling. They may get to even a VP level or maybe a C-level job, but it seems they're always in a staff position like HR, finance, marketing. And one of the things I heard recently is one of the reasons women are not making it to the CEO job is most CEOs come from profit and loss positions where they actually carry a number.
A P&L.
They carry a P&L. So what would be your advice for women in terms of getting into that kind of a career so they can make it into the C-level suite if that's what they want to do?
I get asked that question quite often, and managing a P&L is really definitely the way to get to the C-level.
Mm-hmm.
And when you are addressing, and I don't see the difference between being a woman or being a man, and maybe because I just kind of think mm-hmm. from both sides of my brain, but one of the things that I have been advised to do throughout my career by mentors is lead with the numbers and lead with bottom line results. So when you're having a conversation, mm-hmm. it's really important, one, to bullet point your conversation. Don't give the whole story.
Yes.
You can do the story when you're talking to the folks or your girlfriend or whatever. But at the boardroom and at a senior level meeting, lead with the numbers and give bullet points. Another thing that I would advise, and we had this conversation at the Corporate Executive Board, the last meeting we had, and the Corporate Executive Board is an organization that does research on banking, and they get executives from banks all mm-hmm. over the world mm-hmm. together. And one of the things we were talking about, how do you present your numbers? One of the things I do is I put together a one-pager of mm-hmm. what's working, what's not working, and success stories, and then I back it up with the numbers.
Okay.
And I send that ahead of time
so
that my CEO or my president has an opportunity to digest the numbers. And we don't waste time. When we come to the table, it's about questions. Okay, what questions do you have? But I've got my one-pager so I can get my point across.
Right.
But it's very simple bullet points.
Yeah. Great advice. Great advice. I've also heard for women that we should write out what we're going to say or figure it out and then cut it in half. Like you said,
We just only talk about a tenth or a 20% of what you had thought. The other thing that is really good advice is have the meeting before the meeting.
Yes.
Get the people already aligned with you before you get to the boardroom.
Yeah.
That cuts the time in less than half.
So two very important points. Well, three. Prepare ahead of time. Know your numbers. meet before the meeting with the key people that are going to be there and send the information ahead of time so that they're not digging through the numbers when you get there. We're going to take a quick commercial break. So before we take a break, I want to know how, if you could spell your name, because people may not know how to spell it, and how people can get in touch with you.
It's Dr. Betty Uribe, U-R-I-B-E. And the name of the book is Hashtag Values, The Secret to Top Level Performance in Business and Life. And you can just go into my website, drbettyuribe.com, and there are different ways that you can get my book, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and I've got links in there for everything.
Okay, great. We'll take a commercial break, and we'll come on back and keep on talking.
All right.
Thank you.
Imagine what it would feel like to lose everything. Your job, your home, your family, your dignity. This has happened to thousands of the men, women, veterans, and young adults we serve at Working Wardrobes. What do we do to help? We provide career development services, life skills workshops, job skills training. We provide the perfect interview outfit, and we get clients placed in jobs. Call Working Wardrobes, 714-210-2460. Donate, volunteer, invest, hire.
When it comes to pioneers in their respective industries, we all know the Apples, Starbucks, and Trader Joe's of the world. In the realm of recruiting, Decision Toolbox is the industry's best-kept secret. With 90% of their business from referrals and repeat customers, for over 20 years, Decision Toolbox's U.S.-based team of recruiters, sourcers, professional writers, quality personnel, and tech support has perfected a Six Sigma approach to talent management. No matter the size of the project, Decision Toolbox delivers incredible results. A cost per hire less than half of what contingency firms charge. With the winning candidate presented in an average of 14 days. All with a 12-month candidate warranty. With results like that, Decision Toolbox won't be a secret for long. Visit us at www.dtoolbox.com for more information.
All right, let's pick it back up with Patty and her guest.
So this is Patty. I'm with Dr. Betty Uribe. She's an executive vice president with California Bank and Trust, and she's also author of an incredible book, Hashtag Values, The Secrets to Top Level Performance in Business and in Life. So how did you go from being a banker and go get your PhD and get into all this organizational development, organizational psych stuff?
I get asked that question all the time, Patty. I'm a learner, and if you've taken the StrengthsFinders test by Marcus Buckingham, you know that a learner is an eternal learner, and,
right.
and you love to learn, but you also love to share what you learn. And so when I got my master's many, many years ago, I shared that with my team, and I implemented my master's in a turnaround I did in a different company. At the time that I was doing another turnaround, my team asked me, would you put together a strategy to permeate values-based leadership or servant leadership, they called it one or the other at the time, into our whole organization? And I went home and I just did a master's kind of work over
right.
the weekend, and I came back and they said, no, we want your original work. And I thought, if I'm going to do my original work, I might as well just do it with a safety net and do it right. Hence my doctorate. And so I did my doctorate thesis on values-based leadership, which turned out to be my book eventually. What I have found is the education I received in my doctorate was a transformational opportunity for me as a leader, for me as a woman, for me as a community leader, and as a world leader.
Right.
Why? Because it got me to really think in a different way. I was already going in the right direction, but I'm now more organized. I've got a lot of tools at my fingertips that I use in with my employees. And I am a continuous learner. I firmly believe that the moment we stop learning, we become stale as leaders. And
exactly.
My team deserves the very best of me if I am asking for the very best of them. And for me to become the very best of me, I have to stretch myself and continuously learn and continuously get better. And I find that they do the same thing. It's just like being a parent, right?
Yeah.
When you're a parent, however you behave, your children are going to be behave. Mm-hmm. And so they learn from your actions. And so my team tends to be very collaborative. My team tends to be very, very much a learning team. Mm-hmm. You know, in the first year, we read 12 books together.
Wow.
And 12 leadership books. And depending on the leadership journey that each individual is, then we'll just kind of go with the learning. So that's the reason why, right, I ended up getting my doctorate, because it was the next degree that I could get, and the deeper into it. Today, I differentiate myself with it. It's a definite differentiator in the banking industry, in the financial services industry.
Well, it's interesting because today's world is so disruptive. People are and I know right now Uber's not the best example because of what's going on there. In fact, I had somebody contact me yesterday to want to know if I knew of any capable women candidates would like to be CEO of Uber. So if you're interested, let me know. I'm not sure you're interested in that turnaround. But it was kind of this really strange call. But anyway, it's just the whole idea of being able to lead the way that you do with your people, and that it shows in how they lead themselves. And my biggest challenge right now is I've started my second book. I'm getting the process of getting a publisher kind of for that book. And the second book will be called Play the Game by Your Rules, The Pathway for Women's Leadership, Empowerment, and Equality. My biggest challenge, because I'm such a research guru and such a learner, is every day I see something in the news, or I see an article, or I see something, or Paul, my studio manager, sends me something. And I'm just constantly like, okay, I've got to copy that out and figure out where that fits in the book. So my book is now probably about 15 chapters. It may end up being 29 by the time I finish. At some point, I just have to cut it off and stop with the research. But the
right.
same thing, in today's disruptive environment, you have to be an eternal learner.
You do. And it's interesting. At my last meeting at the Corporate Executive Board, one of the accolades that I've been granted has been when they interview all the C-level executives, or all the executives,
right,
before we have our meeting. And they usually leave me for last, because one of the things I have heard them say, and I say this with the utmost humility, is we love talking to you because you think so differently, and you're always way ahead of the curve, way ahead of the game.
Right.
And the reason I am is because I am an eternal learner.
Right.
And the reason I am, and I always say, you know, my little crystal ball says that we should probably go in this direction. I'm usually right on the right path,
right,
and maybe a little bit ahead.
Mm-hmm.
So my team feels like, wow, we get to be ahead, and then everybody else follows, and that seems to...
Right.
To happen quite often.
Yeah.
But we can't do that unless we are open to learning continuously.
Yeah, there's an old quote by Zig Ziglar, the old sales guru guy that I think he did finally pass away, but he's been around forever, worldwide international speaker. And his quote was, when you're green, you grow. When you're ripe, you rot. So
wow,
if you're not
yes.
growing every day, you're rotting and probably going to fall off the tree.
You are,
and you're going to be obsolete in today's world.
General Mick Kicklider, who was a four-star general in the U.S. Army during the Saddam Hussein days, I interviewed him when he was 70 years old, out of the Pentagon.
Yeah.
And he said, I am 70 years old, and I will never stop learning until I will stop learning the day I am
in the ground.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah.
And that I found very common amongst all of the leaders I interviewed for my book. It's the ability to learn and the ability to impart that wisdom upon their
right.
people.
Right. So you interviewed people you interviewed CEOs, you interviewed people at the White House, you interviewed people at the Pentagon. Are there any particular stories in addition to that one that really stand out for you?
Raquel Bono, Vice Admiral Raquel Bono, I just saw her in January. Actually, I just saw her a couple months ago. We got interviewed in Congress together. And Raquel Bono, right before, let me tell you who she is so that you can understand the magnitude of what she's responsible for.
Mm-hmm.
Right before President Obama left office, he signed an edict making her the lead for all of the armed forces medical facilities around the world for the United States.
Incredible.
And she's a tiny person, but she's a ball of fire. One of the things that I'll tell you a story she told me from a while ago that really permeates, I think, through all of us as leaders. She was in the middle of war. She is a surgeon by trade.
Mm-hmm.
She was in the middle of war, and she was asked to operate upon a soldier, and there were bullets flying all over the place. And the first thing she said, the first instinct was, oh my gosh, they expect me to operate and there's bullets all over. How am I supposed to do that? And then she stopped herself and checked herself and said, wait a minute. The reason I joined the U.S. Army, the U.S. Navy, was so that I could save lives. I'm going to save this soldier's life. And she proceeded to go through the operation outside in the middle of nowhere with bullets going all over, and she saved the soldier's life. So she got she stopped herself and she realized, wait a minute, this is my purpose. This is the purpose why I started doing this, was to save lives. How often do we as leaders get into situations that are really tough?
Oh, yeah.
And it's that higher purpose. Mm-hmm. It's that purpose that gets us through the tough times, because it's not always a bed of roses, right? There
right.
are thorns along the way, and it's that purpose that gets us through.
Yeah, I think we can think of our lives as being, you know, peaks and valleys, and you've got your good times and you've got your down times. And regardless of whether it's a good time or bad time, you should ask yourself, what am I learning here? What could I be doing differently to either create the same result or create a different result if something doesn't go well?
Absolutely.
So it's kind of those key things to think about.
I always say breakdowns are specifically designed to create breakthroughs.
Oh,
if
absolutely.
You let them.
If you let them.
It's up to you.
Yeah, it's up to you. If you could step back and almost be reviewing it from another...
From above. Absolutely.
And look at it with no blame and say, what happened? Why did it happen? What could I do differently to create a different result?
Absolutely. Yes.
And one of the things that I talk about in my book, and we were talking about before we got on the air, was the idea that every person, I say especially every woman, should have their own set of values they write out. So I want to talk about some of the key values that you have. And also have your own personal leadership vision that you use to make career and life decisions.
Yes.
And I walk people through a process of finding your favorite place and start with a piece of paper with your name in the middle. It says You Incorporated. So Betty Incorporated or Patty Incorporated. And imagine in 5 years your favorite TV show, your favorite article, your favorite news show is going to write an article about you. What do you want it to say? And then just start brainstorming a whole bunch of words and eventually have those words become a statement. Now, why I do what I do and the career choices I've made is my personal vision is to make a difference and empower people to be the best that they can be. And so that's why I do the leadership training I do, the keynotes, the presentations. That's why I write the books, why I can't stop volunteering for stuff. Sorry, honey. Is because can I make a difference with this one person? Could you save that one life like that surgeon?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. You know, it's funny. I wrote my 80th birthday toast about...
You're nowhere close to 80.
Ago. I'm not. But I asked my people, in fact, one of my leaders did a video of what he was proud of at the end of his life so that his children can actually watch it after he's passed away. And it's interesting, my brother has terminal cancer. Mm-hmm. He has a glioblastoma in his brain, and he will be passing away from this. And he's teaching people how to live on the radio right now. And here's someone who knows that they're going to be passing away in the next couple of months and is really right. imparting wisdom. So writing your 80th birthday toast or writing your
personal.
Betty Incorporated
yep.
and your personal value statement and what it is that in 10 years from now, when you look back at your life, what will you be proud of?
Mm-hmm.
And that's really what you should anchor yourself
right.
with. And whichever the process... I think it's really important for leaders mm-hmm. to anchor themselves in what will be in your epitaph. My epitaph is going to be very simple. She made a difference.
That's me. Yeah.
That's it.
That's it.
That's it. At the end of the day, what is life about? We only have a few years on this earth. Isn't it wonderful to make it worthwhile that you lived and to be able to leave a legacy that will be around for generations? Mine, you know, I'm collecting dollars for education, and I'm raising funds for 100 kids, underserved kids in each continent mm-hmm. to go through college and for them to pay it forward.
Right.
So we've already raised enough for 54 underserved kids in Southern California.
Awesome. Awesome.
To go to college. We raised $1 million here in Southern California the first day my book came out. And we're going to Kenya and we're going to different places. And you know, when you think about really making a difference for others, However you make a difference, right. whether you do scholarships or just lend a hand to someone, right. your neighbor or whoever, it makes your life so much richer
right.
than just living a daily routine.
Yeah. Yeah, I was at an executive breakfast meeting, and the conversation was around, well, how do you leave a legacy? And people were going through various things. And I said, you leave a legacy by living your values and living your life in a way that is in harmony with who you are and making that difference in the world. But, you know, if you want to leave a legacy, live your vision, live your values to leave that legacy.
You know, it's interesting. You talk about harmony. I talk about congruency. It's exactly the same thing. As long as we had this conversation this weekend, as long as we live our life and we lead according to what we say our value system is, mm-hmm. what's most important to us. For me, it's God, family, job, education, health, and community, in that order. So it's really simple. It's mm-hmm. a very simple way to live your life. As long as I am congruent, as long as the way that I lead is congruent, the way that I lead my family, my children, my neighborhood, my community, if I travel, I make it a point to be aligned with my value system. Mm-hmm. Is this aligned with my value system? If I take a job, is this aligned with my value
exactly.
system? If I take an employee in or a client in, is this aligned with my value system? Then life becomes very simple.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
that's where joy comes from.
Yeah. So what values did you, and you, so you interviewed people at the White House, like I said, and at the Pentagon and CEOs. What key values did you find in all of your research?
You know, I used Rokish's value system, and Rokish has terminal values and instrumental mm-hmm. values. The terminal values are the ones that you will have at your deathbed. The instrumental values are those that are used along the right. way. And so the top values from a terminal perspective, the ones that you're going to die with were family, freedom, health, spirituality, and wisdom.
Okay.
And then the top instrumental values, which are probably the ones that your audience is most interested in, were honesty,
mm-hmm.
being honest and being authentic, being courageous, and it takes courage to stand up for what you believe in, and having a backbone, and it takes understanding your values. Right?
Yep, right.
To be able to be courageous, because then you have something, you have a platform you talk about in your book.
Right.
You have to have something to stand on. And that is how you become courageous. Being responsible instead of, and I would contrast that with being a victim, right? You
right.
either live your life as a victim or you live your life as a responsible person. So taking full responsibility for what's happening, mm-hmm. whether it's good or bad or ugly, it is your responsibility as a C-level executive. It is my responsibility. Whatever's happening in my world is my responsibility. Whether I personally did it or not, it's my responsibility.
Right.
Being helpful was another value that I found. And then being loving, believe it or not, being loving. Now, the leaders I interviewed were specifically selected as being values-based leaders.
Mm-hmm.
And so these are the leaders who led with values, made decisions based on their values, and focused on making a difference for others.
Mm-hmm.
And they were already well known for those three qualities. And those are the values that they came up with.
That's incredible. That's incredible. So I'm sure the audience wants to know, but I want to know too. So what was it like when you went to D.C. and you went to Congress and you went to the White House and you went to the Pentagon? What was that experience like?
It was surreal. If you think of a 12-year-old little girl who came to this country not knowing the language and starting from zero, standing in the White House, standing in the Pentagon, standing in the Vatican, who endorsed
right.
my book, every day I wake up with gratitude, and I don't take any of it for granted, none of it.
Right.
Every day I am in gratitude to my mother for doing what she did, for sacrificing to come to this country, to my Aunt Ruby for teaching me English and saying, hey, someday you're going to dine with the President of the United States, so let me teach you etiquette. And there I was dining with the President 14 years later. So I think when you say what was it like for somebody like me to be standing In the shoulders of giants is really what I say.
Yeah.
And it takes a village. I didn't do it alone. It took the people around me, my children, my family, my spouse, my aunts and uncles, my brothers, and the mentors that I have selected. Either they're mentors or reverse mentors, mm-hmm. which is very critical for a leader to have along the way to get me to be there. And also it takes humility and authenticity.
Right.
I don't think I would have been able to get to where I got to speak to generals from the White House, generals from the Pentagon, whose jobs are absolutely amazing. One general told me, come to D.C., I will tell you things that I have never told anybody.
Wow.
And he had been asked by CNN, NBC, you name it, for interviews. His wife came in and said, who the heck are you? My husband has never granted an interview, even though everybody has been after him, because he worked for several presidents. And to get his stories in my book, you can't do that if you're not authentic.
Yeah.
You can't do that if you don't show up as a real human being who's really after making a sincere impact in mm-hmm. the world.
Mm-hmm.
So it is surreal every day when I wake up, but I think just my deepest gratitude, I'm just so blessed to be living this life.
Yeah, that's incredible. There's so much wisdom in what you said. It's incredible. So how do you as a leader, because sometimes when you talked about those values of being, to me, courage is really important.
Cause yes.
In order to be honest, you need to have courage.
Yes, you do.
In order to be responsible, you need to have courage. So all of them they all definitely fit together.
Yes, they do.
And, you know, as a leader, sometimes you have to make difficult decisions.
Yes.
So how does decision-making impact values, or how do values impact decision-making for you or for leaders?
Thank you for asking that question, because in my dissertation I came up, what I added to the body of knowledge was a values-based decision model.
Really?
Yes.
I didn't know that.
And it is in my book. It's in, I think, chapter 11. When we make decisions, what I have found in leaders that have faltered, leaders that have fallen in all areas of life, in government, education, academia, clergy, business, you name it, look at the role models of the past who are no longer role models, and you will find a decision that was faulty.
Right.
That cost them to be there. So in my decision model, and what we do at California Bank and Trust, is we take a look at, before making a decision whether we're going to buy another branch or a bank, or we're going to sell a branch, or we're going to make a big decision, expand or contract or hire somebody, whatever decision it is, buy a home in your family, whatever decision.
Right.
Take a look at the value system that you're going to be making this decision with. For example, I'll give you a very simple decision that I made. My daughter was in college in Colorado, mm-hmm. and she needed to come. She wanted to come for a weekend. And I said, okay, let's take a look at what is the value of you coming here. Why is it that you need to come this weekend right now? There was something that was standing in the way. And she said, well, you know, I really want to spend time with the family, and I really want to do this. Okay, is there something that we could do at a different time? And it was funny because I was in an Uber, talk about Uber, driving to an event downtown LA, and he heard me go through the values-based decision model, and I did it unconsciously. I said, okay, what is it that you value most, and why does it have to be right now, and why do you want to postpone it, and what would be the benefit of postponing it? It all came down to what do you value most, and how can you make it happen?
Right.
Very, very simple. In a very simplistic way, of course, the model takes into consideration who do you want to grow in your company,
right.
and, you know, how do you create a learning loop? How do you make the right decisions? That sort of thing. But if you put your value system in front of everything you do before you make the decision,
yep,
your decisions will always be right.
Yeah. Yeah. I've always told people that, you know, a lot of companies have vision statements planted on the walls or on the little cards or in their wallets, or they have value statements, and they're not worth anything other than the paper they're written on if you don't use those visions and values to make decisions.
Absolutely.
And so you should ask yourself at every decision that you're going to make, does this fit our values?
Does it fit my values?
Is it right for the customer?
Yes.
Is it right for the company? Is it right for the people?
Yes.
And use those to make decisions. I actually heard that Jeff Bezos at Amazon has an empty chair, a different color, at every executive meeting. And that is the chair for the customers.
Yes.
And whenever they make a critical decision, the final decision is, what would the customer say?
I do this. We do the same thing, but we do that with, we have a mirror effect. Our bank became a case study because of the turnaround. In the case study that Corporate Executive Board did, they coined it a mirror effect. Whatever we do for our customers, we also do for our employees.
Right.
So we have, if you were to have a chair in my meeting room, it would be two chairs. It would be one for the employee and one for the customer.
Yeah.
Because it's the employee who takes care of the customer.
Exactly.
And if we don't take care of our employees first, it's almost like we were talking about before the show.
Yeah.
Put your mask on first. Take
right.
care of your own first. Take care of yourself.
Right.
Take care of your employees. And everything else will come into play.
Right. Right. I actually have these three P's that I say is that how you treat your people impacts how they perform with your customers, which will impact your profitability.
Absolutely.
Bottom
I couldn't
line.
Agree more.
Bottom line. So one last question, and then we'll go through the how people get in touch with you and get a copy of your book, because this has been an amazing interview. You are an incredible woman. I'm so honored to have you here.
Oh, thank you.
So one of the things that I've had a lot of young women ask me about is mentoring.
Yes.
So what have you seen as the value of mentoring? How did you find your mentors? And the last comment would be, what advice do you have for some of the women or men in our audience, because we have men as well, but what is some advice you have to help people really kick that glass?
I define there's a distinction between mentors and champions.
Yep.
A mentor will help you throughout your career. It's someone who will watch you and who will give you advice throughout your career. You need those. And from a mentor perspective, if you are a leader, it's important to get mentors, and it's also important to get reverse mentors. I have a few of each.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I have mentors for every area of my life, not just one mentor for everything, because everybody's strengths is different.
Exactly.
Right? So I have a spiritual mentor. I have a relationship mentor. I have a parenting mentor. I have a mentor for sports, for golf, or for whatever I do. For living a life of balance, I have a mentor. I called one of my mentors this morning because I have something that's happening in my life that I want to get some advice from. And now with my brother's illness, I have a mentor for how do I deal with my brother's illness in his eventual departure. The reverse mentor part is very critical because it is a mirror for how am I showing up with my people.
Mm-hmm.
So if I have a conference, I will call that mentor and I'll say, okay, from your perspective, how did I show up? Did I show up real? Did this is what I meant to say. Did you hear what I meant to say? And sometimes I'm not perfect. Sometimes you're
really?
Gonna, well, we're not perfect. None of us are, right? And sometimes we get when we're open to receiving that kind of feedback.
Yeah.
That's when we grow.
Yeah.
And when we're open to receiving it openly without taking it as a blame or as a victim or anything, but just feedback is a gift. That's the mentor part. The champion piece, if I may, is the individual who is willing to put their reputation on the line for you. This is the person who's going to say, I want you to hire Patty.
Right.
Because she is proven. She does a great job coaching executives. She can put together a great program, leadership program for your leadership team. And I am willing to put my reputation on the line for Patty. That is a champion. So we've got to have both the mentor and the champion.
Right. So one last question, and then what advice do you have for women out there who really need to go kick some glass? What is like your final word or words of advice?
Be yourself. Be comfortable in your own skin. The only limitations you have are right between your ears.
Yep.
And lead with your values and make decisions based on your values. You will never go wrong.
Okay, great. One more time, how do we get in touch with you? And be sure and spell your name.
The best way to get in touch with me is through LinkedIn, and that's Dr. Betty Uribe. I am on social media, Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, and Twitter. But I get a lot of messages through LinkedIn, and they get directly to me. You don't have to go through anybody just to get directly through me. And to get the book, it's drbettyuribe.com, basically. And you can go to Amazon or Barnes & Noble, but you could just get it right through the website.
Okay. And the book is hashtag values, the secret to top performance in business and in life. So thanks for joining us today. This has been an amazing interview. I've just made a new best friend or a younger sister. So just a couple of things in closing. One, we are looking for sponsors for the show. So just like PBS, we can keep this going. We need people to sponsor it so we can keep the show going. If you want to get in touch with me, my email is pattygrimm@live.com. It's pattygrimm@live.com. I'm available to do speeches and conferences and workshops and webinars and all kinds of things. I have a series of leadership courses, and especially a series of leadership courses for women. So I appreciate you joining us today, Betty, and it's been an awesome show, and I want everybody out there to go listen to what Betty said and go live your values and go kick some glass.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to Women Kicking Glass, the only radio show on OC Talk Radio dedicated to empowering women to be the best they can be. Listen each week or download the podcast at patty.grimm.podbean.com. To reach out to Patty to schedule a speech webinar or to learn more about her leadership and team training, contact Patty at pattygrimm@live.com. For more information about her company and her books, have a kicking day.